This is the Saturday Night Live Friday Speaker Meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous held at Westgate West in San Jose, California on June 16, 2000. Our speaker is Russ M. of San Jose, California. The original recording of this meeting is kept in the SNL Tape Library. Please observe the traditions of Alcoholics Anonymous and do not play this recording for commercial or entertainment purposes. Please do not break the anonymity of the speakers or any other AA member at the public level. Thank you.
My name's Russ. I am an alcoholic. And I normally introduce myself as a real alcoholic, and I'll talk a little more about that. And in addition, I introduce myself as a real grateful alcoholic. I'm grateful to Alcoholics Anonymous and a power greater than myself that I found in Alcoholics Anonymous that I'm sober today. I'm sober by God's grace and only by God's grace. And I'll talk a little more about that. I've been a member of this group for a little over 11 years, and I'm very happy about that, honestly. But I made a couple of notes, and the notes in general are, number one, I'm going to qualify myself as an alcoholic, and then people, you know, like topics or kind of, you know, themes. So the theme that I'm going to talk about tonight is the people of Alcoholics Anonymous, the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, and the power, this higher power that we find here in Alcoholics Anonymous. In addition to that theme, I'm going to talk about recovery, my personal experience in recovery. And then I'm going to talk a little bit about unity, the group unity and the unity within me. And then I'm going to talk a little bit about service. So that's kind of where I'm going tonight. So let's start off. I'll start by qualifying myself. And the way I like to qualify myself, and I'll be very brief about it, but in the chapter, A Vision for You, I'm going to read a little bit, and then I'm going to, you know, say how this affects me and how I qualify. The less people tolerated us, the more we withdrew from society, from life itself. As we became subjects of King Alcohol, shivering denizens of his mad realm, the chilling vapor that is loneliness settled down. It thickened, ever becoming blacker. Some of us sought out sordid places, hoping to find understanding, companionships, and approval. Momentarily we did. Then came oblivion and the awful awakening to face the hideous four horsemen: terror, bewilderment, frustration, and despair. Unhappy drinkers who read this page will understand. Now I'm going to take that paragraph and apply it to me. And I think when, you know, I talk about the less people tolerated us, when your family is upset about your drinking and they don't want to have you around the family, the jobs that I had, I always got fired because I drank too much. I was always in trouble with the law over my drinking. And the one line I like the most is, as we became subject of King Alcohol. King Alcohol was my master. I was a slave to King Alcohol. And that's what that shivering denizens. I was a shivering denizen in many, many of bars. So I'm trying to qualify myself. That awakening to the hideous, how's that for a description? Hideous four horsemen. Terror. I'll apply that to my drinking. Is I would go to the drapes in terror to look for my car. I don't know how many people have experienced that kind of terror. Like, where is my car? I was in a blackout. God, I hope I didn't harm anyone. The bewilderment. The getting fired again from a job. You know, geez, I was a top performer for these folks. Don't they understand? I was one of their best salesmen, and I kept getting fired. I was so bewildered how they could do that to me. I don't know if people have experienced that kind of thing around alcoholism. The frustration going home to tell my wife that I'd been fired again for my drinking and trying to make up every excuse imaginable for my alcoholism. The despair. This is the one I liked the best because my bottom was when I signed into a hospital that was on the corner of Hamilton and Winchester called O'Connor's. That was the despair for me. That was the bottom. I had hit a hospital. I'd been to jails, and now I'm going through, quote, institutions, hospitals. In addition to qualifying myself, the man that first talked to me in the hospital asked me to be as honest with myself as I could about my drinking. So he asked me, he said, Russ, what I'd like you to do is I'd like you to take these 20 questions. I'd like you to write your name up on top of these questions. And I'd like to put your sobriety date down on these 20 questions. And then I'd like you to scotch tape it in your big book. And he did that for one reason. He said, Russ, if you ever think that you're not an alcoholic, I want you to take down this book and look at these 20 questions. So, a little demonstration. There's my card with my sobriety date. And just for the new people, I got all 20 right. So, welcome home. And the other part of the truth is I tried to lie about two of them to this guy. And the two that I like to talk about that I tried to lie about was, has your physician ever treated you for drinking? I was in a hospital. Okay, here's the doctor, B, is helping me out. And I wanted to say no to that. And have you ever been in a hospital or institution on account of your drinking? I wanted to say no, and I'm in the hospital. Now, is that insane? Huh? Is that an insane alcoholic? Boy, oh boy, oh boy. In addition to qualifying, now I introduced myself as a real alcoholic. This lady read a little bit about more about alcoholism. And what I'd like to do and follow this qualification. Here are some of the methods Russ tried, okay? This is we tried. Russ tried. Drinking beer only. Oh, I did that for a lot of years out in my backyard. I was all alone, you know, with Budweiser. Limiting the number of drinks. Well, I tried to do that, you know, one or two. It never was one or two, and that's the truth. Never drinking alone. I used to love to drink alone. And you know what I found out? I drank alone for one reason. Vainglory. My own vanity. So I could point the finger at you. That's the way I drank. Limiting the number of drinks? Nah, I couldn't. Never drinking in the morning? I used to love to drink in the morning when it was 9 o'clock and I could say they're drinking in New York. It's 12 o'clock noon in San Jose. Yahoo! So I never really thought that I was drinking in the morning. But I would drink all the time when I would go get on an airplane and fly around the United States. I always drank in the morning. And you know what? I didn't think anything was wrong with that. I really didn't. Never having it in the house. I always had liquor in my house. Never drinking during business hours. I always drank during business hours. Drinking only at parties, I was the life of the party. I had a great time. Switching from scotch to brandy. Now, this is one, you know, I said, no, I never switched from scotch to brandy. But I thought about my days at San Jose State. And I used to go home, and my dad was in the dairy business. So he always had these popsicles around. So I would steal his popsicles, take them back, and they were these lemon popsicles. And I used to steal scotch at the fraternity house and crush those lemon popsicles and pour this scotch over it and they call that a Scotch mist, by the way. Now, did I switch to brandy? Oh, hell yeah. I drank a lot of brandy. So, drinking only natural wines? Well, you know, the natural wine that I drank was out of a box. It had a little tube. I don't know if people remember that. That was a step up from the screw tops, you know. And by the way, what I've heard recently is now the top bottles of wine, $150 bottles of wine, guess what they want to do? They don't want to use corks anymore. They want to go back to screw tops. So, you know, that was fashionable in the 50s to have Ripple screw top wine. That was good stuff. Red Mountain. So, you know, I drank all that crap. Excuse my language. Taking more physical exercise. I was never into that. I was in the Marine Corps, and they used to run us for 26 miles, and then we'd get drunk for 3 days. So the only physical exercise I got was running 26 miles. Reading inspirational books. Oh, you bet. I used to love to read inspirational books. Self-help books, right? It was self-help that I needed. That's the way I handled it. And then accepting voluntary commitment to asylums. Well, I didn't do that, but I did voluntarily commit myself to a hospital program. So, and can I increase the list ad infinitum? You bet I can. So, I'm qualified to be here. I paid a lot for my seat in Alcoholics Anonymous. Now that I've qualified myself, I'll go on with a little bit about the people of Alcoholics Anonymous. The first time I met the people of Alcoholics Anonymous, I was 10 years old. You go, wow, boy, you were a newcomer early, huh? No, not. I had a father that joined Alcoholics Anonymous in 1952. He maintained his sobriety for 43 years and 11 months. He died sober. So I first met the people of Alcoholics Anonymous when I was 10 years old. And these people were coming into our home all the time. And some of them you know still in this valley. Al E., Jack H. And I met these people at swim parties over in Santa Cruz on Summit Road when I was 10 years old. And I have to share a little joy about the people of Alcoholics Anonymous. Tomorrow afternoon, one couple from Florida, and this man has 42 years of sobriety, will be in my home tomorrow. And another couple here in Saratoga, I think he has about 44 years of sobriety, they'll be at my home also tomorrow. We're having a little family get-together. So they're really part of my family. And I mean the people of Saturday Night Live have been extremely instrumental in my sobriety. So now I'm going to talk about the program. And when I talk about the program, I talk about the program and program power. And how can I best talk to the new person that, you know, well, what's this program stuff, you know? Well, we read how it works at the beginning of this meeting. What I'd like to do is take you a little bit on a journey, Russ's journey. The journey of recovery. So this is what I plan on doing is, here are the steps we took. This isn't how it works. It is not why it works. It's how it works. I think that's important. My hope is the newcomer hears that. It's how it works. Because when I got here, I kept thinking they were saying why it works. How it works. Here are the steps we took, which are suggested, and these are suggested steps as a program of recovery. One, we admitted we were powerless over alcohol, that our lives had become unmanageable. Now I'm going to share my experience, strength, and hope on the taking of that step. What happened to Russ is I came in here after I finished a treatment program. 28-day spin dry. Okay? Silk Sheet Factory. Whatever other alcoholics wanted to call it. Is I came in, I took my seat at Saturday Night Live. I started attending meetings. I didn't want to get close to other alcoholics because I didn't want to tell you the truth about me. And the truth was, physically, I was not drinking. But mentally, I wanted to drink like crazy. So I came to meetings. I did what you told me to do. I picked up the ashtrays. I did the coffee. I was of service to this group. But I have to tell you, in all honesty, something happened to Russ. 9 months sober. The obsession to drink was still with me. I wanted King alcohol. I wanted to drink. This is what happened with the first step for Russ. 9 months physically without alcohol. I was mentally insane. I wanted to drink like crazy. My hope is that other alcoholics can identify with the obsession of the mind. I had a disease, a disorder. My mind was telling me, drink, Russ, drink, Russ. And I knew if I drank, I would die. I knew that getting out of the hospital. How did Russ know that? Well, after about 4 or 5 car crashes, and you know, you're at the bottom, literally. And to me, my way of thinking, the bottom is when you stop digging. That's what I was told. Stop digging. Take these steps. How do you take a step? First, you work it, and I believe the step takes you. If you be alcoholic, it will take you. We admitted we were powerless over alcohol. Russ admitted he was powerless over alcohol. 9 months, physically without alcohol. My head is yelling at me, drink, Russ, drink. And I knew that in our hall closet was a beautiful decanter of scotch. And I mean crystal decanter of scotch. I went to the hall closet. I took it out. I stood at my kitchen sink. I poured out a big slug of scotch. And I wanted to drink like fury. But I did what you told me to do. I got down on my hands and knees and I said, God, my name is Russ. I'm helpless and I'm hopeless before King Alcohol. Help me. This power came into my life. I got up off of my hands and knees and I poured that stuff down the kitchen sink. Now, this is what I believe in the taking of the first and the second step. This is what I believe, and this is what worked for Russ. This is my experience. That was not Russ that got up off of his kitchen floor. That was a helpless, hopeless alcoholic that found a power greater than himself that he didn't drink that day. Because the truth about me is I'm without defense against the first drink. And my belief is that's why I'm an alcoholic. There's a difference between an alcoholic and a drunk. There is a difference between an alcoholic and a drunk. Drunks will drink for a long, long time and they'll stop for some reason. And they just won't drink anymore. Alcoholics, on the other hand, will stop, but they'll still have the mental obsession, the physical allergy. And, believe it or not, they'll still have a spiritual malady. And that's what I found out about Russ, is that I had a spiritual malady. We talk about this big gaping hole in Alcoholics Anonymous. We talk about that. I really believe that is spiritual bankruptcy when you have that feeling. It's called pitiful, incomprehensible demoralization. And by God's grace, I did not drink that day. My belief is I came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. I was restored to sanity when it came to alcohol. I have to tell you, honestly, I'm still insane when it comes to other things. Honestly, I'm still nuttier than a fruitcake when it comes to other things. But when it comes to alcohol, I've been restored to sanity. And that's the message of hope that we give to another alcoholic, that I share freely my experience, my strength, and my hope. So I've taken steps 1 and 2 in recovery, and I firmly believe that in my heart of hearts. Now, it goes on to step 3 in the program of recovery. Made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood Him. Believe me, if you're new here, Alcoholics Anonymous gave me a conception of a power greater than myself that I could identify with. And this is what I'm here to say. My hope is, if you're having problems taking a third step in recovery, that you'll listen very closely to this. But there is one who has all power. That one is God. Period. I'm going to repeat myself. But there is one who has all power. That one is God. Period. And that is the God of my understanding. All powerful. Period. There was no ands, buts, or whats, or shoulds, or coulds. That was it for us. And that's what AA gave this alcoholic. A power greater than myself. What's the point? The point is, I haven't had a cocktail. That's the point of recovery. I haven't had a drink. What happened to me is I said the third step prayer for almost 90 days straight. I'm going to share my experience. In the morning, I would get up. I'll say it this way. I would present myself to the God of my understanding on my hands and knees. And that's the truth about Russ. And I said to this power greater than myself, humbly and sincerely, I offer myself to thee to build with me and do with me as thou wilt. God, relieve me of the bondage of self. Take away my difficulties, that victory over them may bear witness to those I would help of God's love, God's power, and God's way of life. May I do thy will always. And I did this for 90 days consistently. I got so frustrated in the taking of this step that I was ready to throw this book across the kitchen table. And then something happened inside Russ. And I can only describe it this way. It was not a hot flash. It was not that. It was something very different. It was a serenity and a peace inside me that was beyond my wildest imagination. It was absolutely calm. There are many people in this valley that are really into computers, and they talk about nanoseconds, picoseconds. This was for a brief moment. I could never try to put it into words, but I can only say I was at peace with Russ inside. That went away, but it was that brief moment, and I took a third step. People say, well, how do you know you took a third step? Russ, was real simple. I sat down and I wrote out my inventory. That's what happened. I sat down and I made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. The most interesting thing about this word ourselves, who are ourselves? And the people that helped me said, how about pride? How about greed? How about lust? How about envy? How about sloth? How about anger? This is what I inventoried. And the first thing I did is I started listing my resentments. And then I listed why I had these resentments. And then I found out that I was spiritually ill. That was what was happening inside Russ. Is resentment is the number one offender. And believe me, I had a lot of resentments. I resented my dad. I resented my mom. I resented a brother who was a career Marine who was in Vietnam. And I was so torn with that because the real truth about that was I was jealous of him because my parents were always talking about him. Well, how about me? That's how selfish and self-centered I was. And the manifestation of that resentment is spiritual poison. That's what I found out by taking this moral inventory. Then I had to look at my fears. What was Russ really afraid of? And I honestly can tell you, my number one fear was I was afraid I was going to go to jail for a long, long time. I had a DMV record that was 23 pages long. I was deathly afraid that I could be convicted in a court of law as being a real alcoholic. I was scared to death to go to San Quentin. That was my number one fear. My number two fear was the IRS was going to put me away for a long, long time. They wanted their money. You know, they really wanted me. They really wanted me. Oh, boy. So those were my fears that I listed. And then it came to the sex conduct. Well, I was a disco Danny, you know, and I had all those affairs. So, you know, I shared that with another man. So now that I have this inventory, I've inventoried my resentments, I've inventoried my fears, and I've inventoried my sex conduct, I had to find someone to share this inventory with. And what I did is I found a man in Alcoholics Anonymous, the people part of it, that had 23 years of sobriety. And I asked him, would you hear my fifth step? And he said, Russ, I would be delighted. And we sat at Coco's. At that time, it was an AA-approved coffee shop. And I shared my fifth step with that man, and it took a little over 2 hours. I admitted to God. See, God, this fifth step business is real simple after you take it, right? Because God knew what the hell I was up to. I was drinking, ripping, and running. God already knew all this about me. So, you know, my admission to God was put it on paper to ourselves, to that prideful Russ, to that greedy Russ, to that lustful Russ, to that envious Russ. These were the ourselves that I was admitting, yes, I did that. Yes, I did that. And to another human being, this is where the rubber meets the road. The exact nature of my wrongs. And the exact nature of my wrongs were I was resentful. That was one of the exact natures of my wrong. I played the big shot, don't you know? That was an exact nature of my wrong towards people. I was greedy. I was the greedy son that wanted my mom's attention. I was the greedy son that wanted my dad's attention. But the way I went about it was I was a people pleaser. I was a baseball player. I was any damn thing that you wanted me to be just to please you. And what I found out, that's what was killing me, is that part of Russ. And it was my pride that headed the list. It was always my false pride about who I thought I was and what I thought I was. And the real truth about me is I was an alcoholic. I was a real alcoholic. And that was the truth. I must talk about this. Is after I took that fifth step with this man, I went home and I reviewed the first five proposals as suggested in the big book, and I left something out. I wanted to shoot another angle. So I called him on the phone and I shared with him that dark secret. And he said, "Thank you, Russ. We'll meet." So we met again, and then at the first meeting, he gave me a list of my defects of character, and I thanked him very much. And he said, "Go home and review what you've done, and if there's anything that you want to tell me, call me." And I called him, and I gave up the secret. One of the biggest secrets that I had in Alcoholics Anonymous was I didn't want to be an alcoholic like my dad. I didn't want to be a drunk like my dad. My dad was sober for 43 years, but I still hung on to that old idea that I didn't want to be a drunk like my dad. And what I found out is I had this thing called the prodigal son syndrome, okay, where a son returns to his father and he asks for forgiveness, and the only thing the father wants to do is love his son. That's it. That's the miracle of Alcoholics Anonymous. We're entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. I've tried to make myself ready. What that means to me, this is an interpretation, is I am willing to have God remove all these defects of character. Let me share this experience with you. And this is moving on into sobriety. Is I kept trying to fix myself. I kept trying to somehow, how can I communicate this better? That my pride would get in the way and I would try to fix it. And it wouldn't work. And I got frustrated. And I would get angry. And then someone said, "Well, why don't you ask God to help you?" And then it dawned on me, I was missing the sixth step. It's God's job to fix my defects of character, not Russ's job. So I kept trying to grab onto the wheel. And the real truth is, when I felt my pride coming up, I'd say, "God, help me. This is a sick man. Help me from being angry. Help me from being prideful." This was my prayer. And God did for Russ what I could never do for myself. And you know what happened? I started putting out my hand and shaking hands with the people I disliked in Alcoholics Anonymous. And you know what? It broke down a whole barrier for me. It really did. So now with step 7, humbly ask Him to remove our shortcomings. One of the old timers in this valley helped me immensely with this step. And I said, "You know, I'm having problems with removing my shortcomings." And he would say it this way. He says, "Russ, do you believe that being impatient is a shortcoming?" And I would say, "Yes." He said, "Russ, do you believe being intolerant of others is a shortcoming?" And I would say, "Yes, I believe that. It's a shortcoming." And then he said, "Russ, do you believe if you're bragging and boasting that that's a shortcoming?" I would say, "Yes." And his way of interpreting this step was that the shortcoming feeds my defect of character. My impatience feeds my pride. My intolerance feeds my pride. My big shotism feeds my pride. These are my shortcomings. Humbly, dear God, take this impatience from me. Humbly, dear God, take this intolerance from me. I grew up in a very bigoted family. I really did. God, take this bigotry from me. Where does it come from? But it feeds my pride that I'm better than you. And that's not the truth. That is false. The problem with the alcoholic centers in his mind. He can't distinguish the true from the false. I can't distinguish that impatience and how it feeds my pride. because I want to be different. And I really believe that center's in my mind. And it's false evidence appearing real is what we find out in Alcoholics Anonymous. So after this, this individual asked me, he said, Russ, are you prepared to make a list of all the persons you had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all? I said, yes, I am. And so I have my list, and I still have my list. I still have carried that list with me because I caused a lot of wreckage. I really did. So I had my list. Another member of Alcoholics Anonymous, this is why I talk about the people. He said, Russ, there's in the 12 and 12, when you're doing this 8-step list and the 9-step, he said, what I want you to do is write out a script. Have a script prepared. What you're going to say to this person. And so we sat down and we scripted my direct amends. And the way we scripted that, I thank him immensely to this day. He said, when you go to make an amends, the first thing you do is you say the 3rd-step prayer, and you say the 7-step prayer, and then you make your amend. And this is what we scripted out. Is, my name's Russ. I am an alcoholic. I'm a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. And according to the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, I'm here to make what we call a 9-step amends. And I honestly can tell you that helped this alcoholic immensely, is to have a script ready and know the exact nature of my wrongs. Now, I'm going to share something that's real close to my heart. Father's Day is coming up. I lost my father 3 years ago, and it's still very painful, particularly on the radio when I hear about all these people getting ties for their dads and all this good stuff. Well, I have some very special roses in my garden that I'm going to take out to my dad's grave. And that's his Father's Day present. I stood at this podium and years ago and presented my dad with his 43-year medallion. So I hope that some of you can understand this. Maybe it's a frothy emotional appeal, but it's still real. The real Russ inside. He loved AA. He really did. And he was so happy that his son found the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. So I made these amends to my dad in front of my parents' home. And my sponsor said to me, he said, okay, what'd you steal from your dad? I said, you know, I stole a lot of money from my dad. He bailed me out all the time. You know, car wrecks, all that stuff. Geez, he was always bailing his son out. And I remember another member, I'll share this story with you, came down to San Jose State to take me to jail. It was an attorney. I had to make an appearance downtown. So my dad and the attorney from AA went upstairs, and they really wanted to throw the book at me. And this attorney said to my dad, he says, oh, let the son of a, you know, let the kid go to jail, you know, forget it, let him suffer. And my dad turned to that man in front of me. He said, this is my son. I love my son. If I can bail him out, I'm going to bail him out. I don't care what the hell he's done. And that man loved me. And he bailed me out more than once. So I sat in front of his house. And I said, Dad, this is what I stole from you. And I gave him back his big book. And I gave him back a BB pistol that I stole when I was 17. I kept that he took away from me because I was shooting it around the house. Kind of funny, huh? What you steal from your parents. Incredible. And I stole this crucifix. And when I returned that crucifix to him, he said, Russ, do you know this was my dad's crucifix? And I haven't missed it. Thank you so much for giving it back to me. I tell you, I was clean with that man. When he died, I was clean with him. That's what AA gave Russ through the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. And you know, I cried when he died. I'll tell you how he died. This is a great thing. It really is for a recovering alcoholic. He paid his taxes early. You believe that? Paid them early. Got a refund. Went up to Reno to do a what they call a futures bet on the Kentucky Derby up in Reno. He had a heart attack and died on April the 15th, but he paid his taxes. He was real concerned about that. You know, it's amazing what happens in AA. It really is. Incredible. I got a call from my nephew that my dad had died. As soon as I hung up the phone, I called this one member of Alcoholics Anonymous. He had 43 years sobriety. And I said, "Ole, my dad just died up in Reno." He said, "Oh, okay, Russ. Thanks for letting me know. You take care of your mom. She needs you now." He was always thinking about somebody else, Ole. I can tell you what my dad did the morning he died. He got up early. He gave his wife some coffee in bed. He gave his son, my brother, and my sisters coffee, brought that to their rooms. He loved his family. He was married 63 years. Incredible. He was so proud of that. So I made amends to my dad, is what I guess I'm trying to say. I made amends to my mom. My mom didn't want to hear about it, I'll tell you. She did not want to hear about it. But I made amends to her. And she loves me today. She's 83. She's in good health. And she's so happy about this little thing we're doing in the backyard tomorrow for her friends and our friends, people of Alcoholics Anonymous. I'll tell you about an amend I made to my brother. Is we sat at the coffee shop. I said, and his name was Jan. He was named after Jan Garber, the band leader. I was named after Russ Morgan, the band leader. My parents were into this big band music. Well, I tell you, that's all we heard in our house. And I loved it. I really did. It was great stuff. And I said to my brother Jan, I said, "Jan, my name's Russ. I am an alcoholic. I'm in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous." And at that time, I had not had a drink in a little over a year and some odd months when I was making this amends to him. And I thought a moment and I said, "You know, all my life, I've been jealous of you." And that was the exact nature of my wrong toward my brother. And he goes, incredible. He goes, "Thank you." He said, "I never knew that." And it just, we were bonded again. You know, he truly was my brother. And he was happy I was sober. He died. He was a career Marine, a career Navy guy. Spent two tours in Vietnam. I was down on San Jose State Campus in 66 when this Jane Fonda stuff was going on. I was in the Marine Corps. I had sidewalls. You know, I was going to meetings on the weekends, Marine Corps meetings. Saw those body bags. And I know he was pulling a lot of guys in those planes. He didn't talk about it a lot. On June the 1st, God, wow, 2 years ago, they flew the flag over the Marine Corps monument in his honor. And just before he died, they gave him the flag that they flew over the Marine Corps monument. And it was one of the most emotional moments of my life, is to see a dying Marine sitting there so proud that someone took the time out to have that citation done for him. He's a very proud man. I feel like I need to tell you more about some of these amends, but I'm going to pick a funny one now. I had this ex-girlfriend, and I ran into her at Stanford Shopping Center with another member of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I saw her, I went, "Oh man, one to hide, you know how you feel, you know?" Didn't want to see her again. So I asked if I could come see her, and she said, "Yeah, that'd be fine." So I went over to her house and in her backyard. I said, "You know, My name's Russ. I'm an alcoholic. I'm in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, and part of the program is the ninth step amends. I'd like to make some amends. And she goes, wait a second. She goes, oh, I know about that. I'm in Sex Anonymous. I almost had a heart attack. Man. Here I go to make my drunken amends, and she's making a sexual amends. I go, wow, what an order. I can't go through with this one. So, you know, we kind of shook hands and hugged, and I left. But, man, oh, man, you never know what you're going to run up to in these amends. I have to say, honestly, too, that I made a lot of financial amends in this program. Continue to take personal inventory. And when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. I stood outside the church of Santa Clara University for my nephew's wedding. And there's a dog rail on a cross. And it says, he who perseveres to the end shall be saved. This step, continue to take personal inventory, reminds me of perseverance. I've got to persevere. And when I'm wrong, promptly admit it. I have to tell you the truth. I'm wrong quite often. How's that? Whoa! Where'd that come from? But my pride gets in the way a lot because I don't want you to know about how I'm wrong. So I cover up and try to look good, right? That's just M.O. But I can't live that way. I can't spiritually live that way because I start really hating myself. And that's the truth. So, it's better to make this amend when I'm wrong and promptly admit it, is what I found in the program of sobriety. Now, I said I was going to talk about recovery, unity, and service. The 11th step for this alcoholic is a daily step in recovery. It really is. So, I'll share my experience, strength, and hope. Is what happens. The alarm goes off at 5 o'clock in the morning. I stagger down the hall, put on my coffee, and guess what? I get out my 24-hour book, and I get out my reflections book. And I read that on a daily basis. And I've continued to do that on a daily basis. So about 6 o'clock in the morning, after my coffee, I read those meditations. In other words, I get connected with this power greater than myself. And that's how I get this conscious contact. And you know, another part of this conscious contact, now this is going to sound really strange. At 5 o'clock in the morning, when you get up and you're sitting there having your coffee, you know what? You can really hear the birds outside singing. You know? Something about the morning. I just love it. I really do. Boy, I hear those birds singing. And my wife says, oh, those birds are doing this. And I'm going, you know what? The music of the spheres, that's what it reminds me of. Man, they got the best songs. They're out there doing their stuff, looking for food, and I'm going, wow. Now, I told you I was a little insane, but, you know, I like that kind of music in the morning. Now I'm going to talk a little bit about the 12th step. So what happened to Russ is I woke up. That's what happened. I had a spiritual awakening. My spirit came back. It came alive again. How did this spirit come alive? Is I started working with other alcoholics. And today, tonight, you know, here's this pride thing coming back. Maybe it's bragging. Whatever you want to call it. The one man I sponsor just celebrated 5 years of continuous sobriety. He's got a new baby that's celebrating tonight 1 year of sobriety. So, guess what? Russ is a grand sponsor today. I'm a granddad. That's the joy of living in Alcoholics Anonymous. And guess what? You gave that joy of living to this alcoholic. The people, the program, and the power of Alcoholics Anonymous. So I hope I've qualified myself. I hope I've shared a little bit about the people of Alcoholics Anonymous. I need to say this a little more about the people. We have activities here at Saturday Night Live. We have picnics. We have barbecues. I really encourage you to participate in those activities. Yes, they're activities, but that's where you meet the people of Alcoholics Anonymous. So my hope is that you'll participate in these activities. The program, I've tried to outline how this program has been taken. Here are the steps we took. Here are the steps Russ took as a program of recovery. And I've tried to tell you a little bit about my spiritual awakening, tapping into this power greater than Russ. And you know, I owe everything to that power of Alcoholics Anonymous. It took another alcoholic to lead me to this power. And by God, I love Alcoholics Anonymous. I really love this program. I see people come in here, and a month or two later, man, they are lit up. They are having an experience, and I can see it. And it brings so much joy to this alcoholic to see people grab onto this program and want to stay sober, no matter what. They want to stay sober. One thing I will share, too, is I put a bookmark in my book here. It's a card with 44 years of sobriety. And I bought this card for my dad when he had 43 years sober, right? I'm the optimist, right? So I thought, I may as well buy the 44, you know? And he died a month before his 44th birthday. But, man, these are all the people that signed this card for him. And I stood over his gravesite and I read all the names off. And I read the little things they wrote about him. And, you know, it's just a great feeling to be a part of Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, you can go out sober. I hope I can carry that message to you. A very good friend of our family's, 43 years sobriety, died beginning of June, and he was the founder of the Janus program over in Santa Cruz. So if there are any members here from Janus, okay, good. One of the founder died over in Santa Cruz, 43 years sober. He came to our home 39 years ago and had Thanksgiving dinner. And my dad said to my mother, this is incredible. And I'm standing in the kitchen shaking like a leaf because they're fighting over Thanksgiving dinner. And this is what my dad said to my mom. He needs to see a sober Thanksgiving. And that's why he's sitting at our table. And he stayed sober for 43 years. So, I'll finish tonight with a quote that my dad loved. And he would stand up, and I'll almost try to imitate him if I can. He'd stand up and he'd say, "Burn into the consciousness of every man that he can get well regardless of anyone. The only condition is he trusts in God and clean house." I'm going to repeat that. Burn the idea into the consciousness of every man that he can get well regardless of anyone. The only condition is that he trust in God and clean house. Thank you very much.